Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
We're going to start today with a little presentation to you, so please bear with us. That was the sound of the shofar being sounded in Jerusalem just a few days ago. That was the signal for the start of the new civil year, also known more popularly as the Feast of Trumpets. Why did I want to share that with you? Well, if you turn with me for a few moments to 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 52. We are told, we'll start at actually 51. Behold, I tell you a mystery, we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. In the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound and the dead will raise incorruptible and we shall be changed. For this corruption must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So that when this corruption has put on incorruption, and this mortal has put on immortality, then shall come to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. The song we just heard, as special music, was discussing this very thing. They were talking about the need for us to change. At that trump, at that last sound, then you will see the change. Today, as you can probably guess, I'm going to talk about tabernacles, the Feast of Tabernacles. I'm going to look at it from a number of different points of view. I want to look at it historically, what it meant to Israel, and what it means to us as Christians, both present day and in the future. So let's start off with a historical understanding. I'm not going to be going through too many biblical verses here, because there is loads of them, to be quite honest about it. So I just want to start off with a concept, and that is that from a Jewish perspective, the Feast of Tabernacles not only starts their civil year, it also ends their cycle of feast days. It is the last of the feast days. I know it sounds silly to us. We think the last is the last great day, but not from their perspective. You see, they considered this day to be the head of the year, or the king festival. Now, the reason they said this was because they had developed, if you like, the understanding that when you were counting the years of a king, you started it on a fixed date and you finished it on a fixed date. It wasn't when he came into power, it was when the official year started. So every Feast of Trumpets started and ended a reign of a king, or counted for his many years he would reign. And that's how they've been doing it since David. So it was a situation that the tribes of Judah actually did and maintained for many, many years. And we have that throughout Scripture. When you're counting their years, that's what they're counting from. But we also know that they believed very strongly that the creation of the world started on the Day of Trumpets. You say, well, where did they get that out of? Well, they have a reason for this. One of the things is they have always maintained, and when we look at the evidence within the Bible, we can see why they were thinking along these lines. They've always maintained that it had to be in the late summer, early autumn of the year. And the reason they said that is, when you went into the Garden of Eden, the trees were loaded with fruit. God had actually started creation at the time of the harvest. the time when everything was in abundance. So everything was freely available. And that's why their calculation of the years of the earth's existence starts on the Feast of Trumpets, which is the first of the harvest feasts. So we start off with understanding how important these things are deemed. Of course, you could say that as we are able to keep records of creation right through, and we have the instructions within Scripture of how to record dates, days, months, years. In Genesis, it tells us that's why we were given them, the stars, the moon, the sun, so that we could work out our dates and days. It's interesting to note that that actually was changed after the dispersal, where the Jews lost the temple and no longer were able to keep those observations in Jerusalem. So as a result of that there, the Jewish religion, as it had existed, ceased after 135 AD. It no longer existed. And the reason for that was the Jewish religion is based on one concept, that you have a temple and that you can make offerings to God. When the temple was no longer available, that process stopped, and therefore their religion had to change. And it became to what we know today as rabbinical Hebraism. Now, here's our situation. In exile, all over the world, in different places, the Jews wanted to maintain a calendar to be able to understand when all the feasts and festivals still occurred, when the Sabbaths were coming, the right dates. So they wanted to maintain an understanding and keep that information alive. Their problem was, however, that they couldn't do it from the moon. So they worked out a mathematical code, or to be more exact, one individual rabbi worked it out, and his name was Hallel. He did this about 200 to 300 years after the dispersal. So there was that period or gap in time where we don't have all the information. For it to work, though, he had to make some shortcuts. He had to work it out on a mathematical basis, and therefore, if you were looking at the Jewish year today, it would say it's 5,776. 5,776. The difficulty is, that was not the ancient calendar. The ancient calendar works to a different perspective. But that had been lost, hadn't it? The Bible tells us how to regain it, but people had lost the count. Interestingly enough, in the 1980s, there was a little scientific endeavor. Man was exploring space, as he occasionally does. And he decided that he wanted to leave laser receivers on the moon. So he put these on the moon with the aim that they could fire laser towards these pieces of equipment and get accurate readings of the movements of the moon and all the planetary systems around it using this level of accuracy. They discovered, though, that the information that was so accurate that when they put it into the computer to calculate, they were not only able to calculate exactly what was happening and where the sun, the moon, the stars and everything else should be at any given point in the future, but they were able to go backwards through their own records and find that it actually worked in reverse. It allowed them to go backward through history and pinpoint exactly to the hour when events happened. This changed everything from a Jewish perspective. And Messianic Jews have since produced a calendar which is called the Sacred or Creation Calendar. Now, why am I bringing this up to you? Why is this so important? Maybe it's not. But I want to give you an idea. The traditional thought within creationism is that God created everything in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Hebrew bases the concept that God is working through a day for 1,000 years plan, which indicates that each day represents 1,000 years. And so they indicate that what God is doing is he's using a 6,000-year plan for mankind, which will rest on the seventh day, which commonly is known as the millennium. However, as I mentioned earlier, the problem that was is when they actually were doing their wee count from the rabbinical Jew aspect, there's about well over 200 years before that 6,000 years up. No panic there, you would agree, no panic. It's not due for at least 200 and some years. And this was having a negative effect on many Christians looking through the same book. Look, we're looking around us, we see what's happening. It couldn't be another 200 odd years. They were getting, if you like, a little bit annoyed. So the ones that checked, was those figures right? That's why they came up with the second calendar. They have this calendar analysed, examined, looked at by mathematicians, astronomers, everyone else. The whole thing has been authenticated. But there's a problem. Yes. They came up with a different date. They thought they would, but the date of the new calendar, as of last Thursday, which was the Feast of Tabernacles, was 5,997 years. This has had, shall we say, a bit of a wake-up call to many Messianic Christians. And the reason for this is because they are now faced with the possibility that if their calculations are correct. Now, they're not saying they are. They're not saying that in Feast of Tabernacles 2015 Jesus Christ has returned. They're not saying that. They're just saying that the evidence that they have got so far is making them think that maybe it's a lot closer than they originally thought. In which case, we should be looking at world trends. We should be examining what's happening around us because we could be in the final era of this present age. That's where they are. That's what they're looking at. So, just a wake-up call. Maybe we could look at it like that. But should we be concerned about that? Should we worry about the fact that maybe Jesus comes back in 3 years? I know from our perspective we would think it might be a wee bit longer for we're expecting certain events to happen. However, let's just say that he was coming back in 3 years. Would that be terrible for us to think that? Well, back in the first century, that church of the apostles who taught the people and all the rest regularly taught that Jesus Christ was expected within their lifetime. They were being taught that it was imminent, the return of Jesus Christ. So we are to lead our lives, to teach, to instruct, with the emphasis on that Jesus Christ could return immediately, without any warning. Of course, people say, well, you can't really fix the date and the day because it says in the Bible that you can't tell. God has kept that for himself. It's hidden. Well, that's true. The interesting thing is, this feast, the Feast of Trumpets, is rather unique. Let me explain why. In the Bible, every single feast you can plan ahead for. I mean, you can literally go out there and say, right, on that day, I'm attending the feast. And while we, because of the new way the calendar was looked at, are able to do that as well, originally, this was called Hidden Feast because they didn't know when this feast would occur. Now, I'm not talking that it would be weeks out, no, but there could be days out. And the reason was they had to go to Jerusalem, they had to go to the top of the mountain, and they had to have at least three witnesses who saw the crescent moon before the new civil year could be announced. And if the three witnesses didn't go up, if they didn't see anything, then even though they had figured out mathematically this should be the moon tonight, where is it? Why did it not come up? Who put that cloud there? What's God trying to tell us here? All these things, because they were not permitted until it was visible, until you saw it. You could not declare it. Until it was visible, you could not declare it. Do you understand the significance? Well, Jesus Christ, we are told, is coming back on the Feast of Trumpets. The Bible indicates this throughout numerous places in the New Testament, shall we say, cryptically. It says the trumpets will blow, etc. And this is the time of the blowing of the trumpets, the day of change. But let's consider something. We're also told that no one will know he's coming until they see his sign in the sky, until he appears. And when you see his sign in the sky, don't bother going down to the house to change or get anything from the house or go back out to the field or anything else. You're ready. That's it. It's at that time. But here's the thing. This is an exact reason why the Feast of Tabernacle, or the Feast of Trumpets, I knew I was going to say that, you know, I've been doing it all day. The Feast of Trumpets is considered the hidden feast, because they could not declare it as the new year, the new beginning of the civil year. It's the first day of the seventh month. It sounds silly that it's the beginning of the civil year, but it is. And they could not declare that until it was seen, the crescent moon. And it says, we can't declare and expect Christ to come and return and our change to happen until we visibly see him coming in the clouds. Two little things of note that I thought I'd bring up. So let's look at some other aspects of the Day of Trumpets. Traditionally, I know when we say traditionally, it sounds a wee bit weird, especially as people have other ideas of tradition. But traditionally, this is the day of Jesus Christ's birthday. I know it's the world's birthday, it's Christ's birthday. It's also the birthday of many, many individuals throughout the Bible, according to Judaic thinking. But can we actually stand over that claim that trumpets is the day Jesus Christ was born? Actually, we can. And it's interesting because the Bible confirms it, but not because birthdays generally aren't all that much common in the Bible, shall we say? It's not recorded too often. The way it's been recorded is in different places, but we can work it out for ourselves. It's very simple to do. So I'd like to try that with you today, okay? I'm going to start with something that we all are familiar with, okay? We know that in the book of Luke, we are told about the conception of John the Baptist. We remember this. His father was a priest. He was in his course as the priest, fulfilling what he was doing over a weekly period on his particular course, which was number 8, because he was Abijah. I think it was Abijah. Let me just go to Luke and check that out, because sometimes we can get these things pronounced wrong. I can get them mentioned wrong even if I do read them, so it makes a real difference that I, but you know, these things do happen. So, going back here, people waited. So, it's in the Gospel of Luke, and it's verse 8 of first Luke. So, the bit that I'm looking for actually is in verse 5. There was in the days of the King Herod, the king of Judah, a certain priest named Zedekiah of the division of Abijah. It is Abijah. And his wife was the daughter of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Now, how can that help us identify when Jesus Christ was born? Well, we know that this priest received a vision when he was completing his task. And that vision was hard for him to believe. It wasn't that he didn't deny that he saw an angel. No problem there. It was what the angel said that sort of threw him. It said that his wife was about to have a son. And he was going, but she's kind of, you know, like myself, Pastor. And the angel said, well, you know, I see you're having trouble with this, so I'm going to help you along. You're going to be blind. So he became blind until it fulfilled. Now, here's a wee problem. Small little thing. When you're a priest and you're performing in the temple, you're not supposed to have any physical defect. Just one of the written laws. So this priest, when he became blind, could no longer complete his course, which was only basically from the Saturday to the Saturday anyway, because there was only out of 1 week at a time. Now, these courses consisted of 24. So you had 24 sets of priests from the one family, all of whom were going up at their particular set times. Now, you say, well, 24, how many times a year would they actually end up having to do it? Twice. They ended up doing it twice a year within their courses. However, mathematics among us will know that if you work 24 and 24, it doesn't quite come up to 52. However, there are three special occasions when the priests don't go in their course, but they all join together to serve in the temple. That was Pentecost, or Days of Unleavened Bread, if you like. Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. That's it. The 3 days. You'd mentioned them earlier. I said, oh, good. I can use that again. But it's one of those things you forget then. So in that time, the process of the courses are suspended for the time of that, and then they move on from there continuing. So it works out that you only ever do it twice a year. But they also have a particular time when they change these courses, and that's what I want to look at. And if we go to, you know, I was sure I marked this earlier, but I probably didn't because I'm like that. I think it's in Luke as well. It's where the disciples were actually picking grain on the Sabbath. And for some reason, I thought I had it measured. Yeah, here it is. It's Luke 6. As it happened on the second Sabbath after the first, that he went through the grain fields, and the disciples picked heads of grain and ate them, rubbing them in their hands. That phrase, it happened on the second Sabbath after the first, was synonymous to these change of the priest's orders. In other words, their courses that they were doing. The second Sabbath after the first always represented trumpets, because on trumpets, that was when that starts. They started everything at the start of the year, and this was the second process. The first process was in the spring, second process is of trumpets. So we have a date of when this started. Now, because we now know that trumpets is in start, and we have it also in the spring, we have the two courses running approximately 6 months apart, we're now able to work out that 8 weeks into it is when this father of John the Baptist actually got a visitation from an angel. So, taking the Passover, go 8 weeks, send him home. He's blind. He's been told that the only way he's going to get his sight back is to fulfill the command of the angel and make sure that he has a son. So, but he's not going to delay things around here, we don't think. So let's assume that within a week or two, the conception has happened. That would leave us 6 months from the Feast of Tabernacles, when, if I'm getting this right now, keep me right if I'm wrong, This would give us a period of time. Now, my calculations are bad here, but I was trying to work it out in the car and I might have got this mixed up, but we'll work on it anyway. When Mary is given her news that she is about to have a child through the Holy Spirit, she's told that Elizabeth is 6 months pregnant. Right? So if we take that she's 6 months pregnant, and that Mary has 9 months to go, we then arrive back at a year, don't we? Because 3 months and 9 months is 12 months, so we're bound to have that. So it's this, he's at the second, and it works out to 10 months. I know, my mathematics is horrible. You see, my mathematician was out of the room. That's why I could have called on her and she could have helped me, but those things happen. But the concept of the thing was that when you actually sit down and work it out, you'll discover that Jesus has to be born in the autumn of the year. He has to be born in the autumn of the year because that's the only time that the whole things work out. And you can work it out simply by working that aspect out. But then in Revelation 12, we find an interesting agreement to this, to specify it even a little bit more. We find that there is an unusual sign given by John in Revelation 12. It's between 1 and 2. And a great sign was seen in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and upon her head was a crown of 12 stars. And she being with child screamed, travailed in birth, and agonized to be delivered. Now, here's the situation. To us, this means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Haven't a clue. What's he on about? What is he going on about? Because what do we know about signs in the skies? But interestingly enough, if we had lived pre-industrial revolution, we would have known a lot of this information because we would have been dependent on what was happening in the stars to work out when to plant, when to sow, and when to do anything. When I was a child, my mother used to buy a small volume called a Moore's Almanac. Some of you may be familiar with that term. She said that this was going forever, and it gives them all the ideas of what was going to happen throughout the year. Now, the almanac was used by farmers, and it basically was they looked at what was happening in the sky. They looked at the position of the planets and moon and everything else, and they procrastinated what was going to happen throughout the year. When the best sowing seasons are and others. Today we look at that and we say, well, that's a bit, you know, far-fetched. We'll turn on the weather. Where, funny enough, they look at the sky, but we're not getting there. But you see, when John was writing Revelations, this was common. This was known. They understood that when you saw a sign in the sky, he was talking about a constellation. And if he was talking about a woman with 12 stars around her head and all of the rest, and he specifies it here, the woman was clothed with the sun and the feet, they knew exactly which constellation they were looking at. It was Libra, as we would call it. However, here was the interesting thing. If you go through star charts backwards, there is only one period of the year where Libra fulfills this sign. And that is on, you guessed it, the Day of Trumpets. The Day of Trumpets, Libra will always be in the right place with the sun and the moon exactly as presented. But at one time, she also had the 12 stars and the right place to produce the crown. So all of this here is in the stars, literally. Because God in Genesis said that through the planets, the moon, the stars, and all the rest, he would determine signs and places. Why do we worry ourselves about something like trumpets? Do we need it for salvation? No. Why? Because Christ has done everything we need for salvation. But if we want to learn about God, and we want to understand how he works with us, and that he doesn't do anything ships yard, he more or less has everything planned in advance, then we have to understand that those plans are revealed to us. And he has established ways to do it. And one of the ways of doing that is through the festivals. If you look at Passover, you know that that was the fulfillment of Christ's coming. If you look at Pentecost, you know that that was the fulfillment of the birth of the church. Mm-hmm. The next one along is trumpets. And we know, because the New Testament is full of it, every letter you read from Paul almost mentions it, that at the last trumpet, on the day of trumpets, at the last trumpet, when it is sounded between the start of the year, that is when Jesus Christ is expected to return. Now, he might surprise us, because the Bible does say he could be sent early. And that meant it could be sent earlier than on the day, or earlier than when we're expecting, which is scary, because if we're in 5,997 and he's coming early, ooh, maybe we don't have 3 years. But this is simply information. It doesn't change your faith in Jesus Christ, and that's the important thing to remember. Through Christ, all things are made right between us and God. Through Christ. And Christ will return. He will establish his kingdom. He will come. We just have an opportunity on certain days of the year to look closely at some of the things God already has put in place that we can learn from. Thank you.